Daughters in Charge, brought to you by wealthmanagement.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Daughters in Charge. I think you'll find today's guest will give you some insights and help you think about some issues that you may not have thought about before, and I'm delighted to have her with us. This is Holly Isdale, and she is the founder and strategist of Wealth Haven. Holly, welcome, and tell us a bit about what Wealth Haven does.
Thank you so much. Wealth Haven is a consulting firm. We focus primarily on very wealthy families and family-owned businesses. I spent the bulk of my career on Wall Street running the estate and financial planning groups for some very large firms. I started off as a corporate tax lawyer. And I think my experience at firms like JP Morgan and Goldman and Lehman and Bessemer led me to realize that I had clients who had the best advisors. They spent fortunes on legal work. They spent a huge amount of time interviewing and selecting investment managers. But everything fell short of what they hoped because there was just this missing piece of somebody to quarterback and oversee the process. And Wealth Haven's tagline is welcome to peace of mind. Our view is that our clients are overwhelmed by the sheer complexity of the assets that they have or want someone to handle it on their behalf that's trusted, that works for them, that can really make things happen. And having the deep expertise on the tax and the structural side, on the investment side, you know, we've been in the proverbial factory seeing the sausage made. We know where the issues are and we want to just make it easier for our clients. Many of them are very sophisticated and just realize they have a day job and they don't want to do this. Others have stepped into this system. They inherited the wealth, they buried, you know, the maker of the wealth, or it's all of a sudden come upon them that this has gotten out of control. And our job is to really, there are many times we're just organizing the data and the information and then helping clients understand where you are today and prioritizing a number of steps we can take to get you to your goals. I think the biggest difference with Wealth Haven is that we actually execute with our clients. We're not going to be the attorney. We're not your accountant. We're not trying to manage your money. We're not trying to sell you an insurance policy. We sell our time and our expertise. And our job is to just, but unlike many consultants that are like, you should do something, our job is to really help you implement on your goals.
So I know, Holly, that you've had a fair amount of experience with family businesses. And I wondered if there are particularly unique issues for family businesses as they think about managing wealth that you've experienced and that you have some thoughts about.
Absolutely. And I love working with family businesses in some ways because the more complex and the hairier the topic is or the situation is, the more fun I think it is. And it can be a little scary for people when I get so excited about some stuff. I think the issue with family businesses is that the advisory system, particularly on the investment side, is really geared towards liquid wealth. They're very happy to manage your wealth, but accessing top investment expertise is difficult when your liquid wealth may be minimal compared to your illiquid wealth. And for many families, it's thinking about, okay, I've got this stream of income coming out of a company, but it's not really a bond where I just get income payments or dividend payments. There's something else that goes along with it. And it's complicated by issues of communication and governance and corporate agendas and the individual agendas. I do a lot of work with trusts and trust beneficiaries around family businesses and trying to ensure that the communication is right and the documentation is right. There's a lot of estate planning really good estate plans for family businesses that fall short or get outdated very quickly because often they're designed with one goal in mind. Let's preserve the family business. And we create this awful dilemma for posterity being creation of the family business, but not thinking about what the implications of that might be for the beneficiaries. So I think family businesses have such tremendous potential. They're such a key part of our economy and they fail for lack of tax planning. They fail for lack of succession planning. But I think so much of it is that failure is a fear of communicating because it's hard conversations you may have. You're not going to be in charge. Dad did like me best. As well as fear of just, it's complicated to dig into this stuff and to deal with all these moving pieces that are so intertwined, and to try and bring all those to something that you can understand often makes people delay engaging in the process.
It is complicated, and I'm aware that for many women, it's particularly challenging because they haven't really thought about the issue of potentially being a leader in a family business or an owner or someone responsible for sustaining the business into the next generation. Are there some particular thoughts you have about what a woman in a family business, particularly a younger woman, should be looking for in an advisor?
In an advisor, I typically suggest people look at what I call the five P's: the people, the platform, the process, performance, and price. And that is very clear in an investment structure, but I think it applies equally to lawyers, accountants, business advisors. You know, who am I working with? What are these people like? What do they believe in? What's their agenda? How do they get paid? What's the platform? Is it what I need? And you see this very clearly in the investment space, where people just don't understand the difference between working for a bank, a brokerage firm, an independent advisor, an outsourced CIO, but also in the consulting space, where what is your expertise? How much of this do you implement, or do you just recommend and I have to do the work? And it's okay that I do the work, and I think it's important that the families do the work, but understanding the platform, understanding what the process entails, because sometimes it can be overwhelming, understanding what success means and defining success and choosing an advisor, and then understanding the costs. I think the biggest issue that underlies all of that, though, frankly, is, and particularly for younger women, is really knowing yourself, how you make decisions, and how to maximize your voice in the process.
What do you see and observe in some of the women that you work with when they initiate or call you for something?
It's interesting. Sometimes they're very hesitant to start the process, or they want to justify how they got there. And I think the first thing we try and do is to make them understand this is a safe discussion. We're not passing judgment on them for how they might have gotten themselves in a mess. I remember working with one female business owner, and her husband had said, well, give Holly all the information. And I kept saying, you know, I'll come over, let me see what it is. I'm going to be in town, let me stop by, because she wasn't sending it to me. And she finally said, I'm just so embarrassed because I don't know what to do with it. So I just throw it in a drawer. And I opened up, and sure enough, there are these three deep, deep drawers and a huge dresser in one of her spare bedrooms. And it was all these unopened envelopes, and just taking it and saying, I'll take it. We'll go through it all. We'll come back to you. I think too, sometimes they come in with someone else's agenda that's been told to them, and getting them to understand that you don't necessarily have, you either have to own the process that you're being asked to lead, or you have to figure out how to make what, you know, change it to something that you want.
I'm thinking of those drawers of unopened envelopes, and just assuming that there are many of our listeners who are identifying with that. So I'm curious about the notion of the initiation that a woman might take in contacting an advisor. But I'm also aware that in some cases, women, particularly younger women, inherit advisors. And that may be wonderful if the advisor has a long-standing relationship and has built up trust. But my sense is it's important for the daughter to create her own relationship. And I wonder if you could address how you manage, when you've worked with a family for a while, moving from the father to the daughter. And are there some specific examples where you can talk about what that experience was like for you?
There are. I'm trying to think of a couple, that as opposed to walking you through laundry lists. I'm a big believer that you should understand what the landscape looks like. And so that means meeting with other advisors, getting to know other advisors, you know, knowing another lawyer in town or elsewhere that you might be able to turn to for advice that's not your father's lawyer. At the same time, I really try and foster and help build those relationships. There are many times that I've accompanied a daughter to a meeting with an advisor simply so that, and without the father or the mother there, so that they can have an independent conversation and be able to help them understand if they're being talked to as a client or as the daughter. I think too, it's important that clients understand and the daughters understand where the conflicts lie and where the allegiances lie. Just because you're in talking to your dad's attorney doesn't necessarily mean he owes you the same attorney-client privilege that he owes your father. And getting them to understand the relationships that they're doing, because I've seen many people walk in, have a chat with a lawyer, and unburden to them, not realizing, or to an investment advisor, not realizing that all of that information might go back to their father or their mother. So I'm a big believer in having a network of your own and also fostering those relationships with the existing advisors. I think, too, there's an exploration of making sure that you know what your goals are for the wealth that you're inheriting, for the business. And that's a lifelong process of just identifying, you know, where do I want to take this today?
I think that's a wonderful set of insights that you've just shared, particularly the one about unburdening to a parent's attorney. Because I think when women begin to feel comfortable, they are probably more open and sharing. And the fact that you accompany women, I like the idea of women going with a partner or with someone who respects their interests and encourages their questions and clarity for them. So it's a very nice model that I think daughters can adopt from what you've said. One of the issues I know, just when you mentioned the unburdening of information, I know that you've become an expert in cybersecurity. And, you know, I think this is something, particularly with smaller businesses, that they just may not be thinking about in the ways that they need to, particularly younger people who are very tech savvy and share a lot online as well as with each other. And just if there's some maybe one or two key points about that you could share, I think it would be helpful to the daughters listening.
Yeah, cybersecurity has just become a passion of mine. And I think the issue that I found was that most people don't understand how big of an issue it's becoming. And the cyber threats that we're seeing are no longer science fiction, James Bond, Mission Impossible type things, that they're real. And so much of our information, your personal information, is one of the hottest commodities in the world today and being traded. And the way identity theft works and cyber terrorism works is information is gathered and aggregated. And the big data, which is a hot buzzword on Wall Street in terms of helping investment advisors find new things, all of this technology, these supercomputers, this ability to aggregate and see trends in data is equally adapted by cyber terrorists. And, you know, if you're going into crime, running cocaine is expensive and people tend to shoot at you. If you're going to do cybersecurity, cyber terrorism, you can do it from your couch in a warm house and at 2 p.m. when you're home or on a weekend. And so it's a rising threat across the world. We're spending trillions of dollars globally on cybersecurity initiatives. And I think people just don't understand that we have really given up our privacy and we need to reclaim it if we can.
Just curious whether you think women are more vulnerable to cyber attack or hacking.
You know, we may be in the way that we communicate with our friends and our chats. I think, you know, I will always caution clients to realize that every text that you send, every email that you send, every digital communication, perhaps every voicemail that you leave, every post on Facebook could be public and searchable in 3 or 4 years. And that goes back to stuff you posted 10 years ago. So it's important to understand that information is so easy to get and to aggregate that so much of what you might think, no one's going to know what my first dog's name was, well, you posted it on Facebook 3 years ago. It is critical. I think it's not a gender issue by any stretch of the imagination, though. I think, and in many ways, men may be as unaware of the risks that we have because people just don't tend to, this is a new area and no one's thinking about it, or they think about it in terms of big hacks. You know, Pfizer gets hacked, Target gets hacked, a Home Depot gets hacked, big banks get hacked. They don't realize that you get hacked.
Well, and I suppose that particularly, you know, if I'm a 30-year-old woman and I'm poised to take over a family business, it's going to become a much bigger issue. So it's probably important to become informed right now about what the potential is and what are the ways that one can protect oneself.
Absolutely. And I just focus in on content. And I think the biggest mistake we make is to put our trust in third parties. Yahoo is secure. Gmail is secure. My lawyer is secure. They're thinking about this, and not realize that they may be thinking about it for their own ends. You know, Yahoo and Gmail are trying not to get hacked, but they do all the time. And the cost to protect yourself is actually actually really inexpensive if you think about it. It's less than what you spend at Starbucks or on, you know, silly purchases, random purchases that you might make. It's maybe a couple $100 a year, sometimes even less than $100 a year, and you can vastly decrease your risk of cybersecurity. And I encourage everybody, it's one of the things I ask for when I'm doing advisor meetings, is I want to see your privacy policy. I want to see your cybersecurity policy. Companies are required to alert you if there's been a data breach, but many of your advisors often don't know if there's been a data breach or aren't required to tell you. And so it's incumbent on you to really protect your content and your own information.
One of the things that strikes me listening to you, Holly, is that for the next generation, men and women joining their family's business, they're often in the role of being change agent. And it seems like this is one area where a son or a daughter can really play a leading role with parents and with advisors to call attention to this issue, because it does sound like it has really profound implications for families and for their own individual peace of mind.
I think, Amy, that is absolutely spot on. If you think about this in terms of a rising generation member, they are often so much more technologically savvy than their family members. They can introduce ways that the family can enhance their cybersecurity and really take a leading edge and become an expert in it. I mean, I was about to say it's not rocket science, but I mean, elements of it can actually be rocket science, but it's not so complicated, and it's a great area for you to embrace. The other area that I've been very active in lately is the idea of gamification. And gamification in business is the application of game theory and game design elements to business techniques. So employee training programs are gamified. You get points, you get badges, there are leaderboards, there's competition, there's elements of play that are brought into employee training. And I've been doing a lot of that in family meetings. So using some social media platforms like Pinterest or Facebook in private groups to augment a values exercise or to do some scenario planning. We've done gamification of family educational programs. We've created gamified scavenger hunts that go around family meetings. Another area where the younger members are often so much more attuned to the use of social media and the use of so many of these applications that it can be a way they can take a leadership role. One of the biggest things that you find when you employ a game like atmosphere to a learning environment is that innovation skyrockets, retention skyrockets, and you get broad engagement. And so if you think about a family business, so much of it is creating good paths for communication, common understanding, trust. All of those underlie the ability of a family governance system to succeed. Is you've got to trust each other. You have to be able to talk to each other. You have to be able to understand where the other person is coming from. And I've always just gotten frustrated at the family meeting education where, you know, I'm up in front, wah, 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 on taxes I get bored listening to myself. Family members get bored. So when you can make it fun and interactive, the whole vibe of the meeting changes. And I've done it for board meetings. I've done it for, as I said, for family businesses. I've done it one-on-one with family members in helping them figure out their vision for their future leadership role. And I think that's just another area where the rising generation, because of their ability to be tech savvy and their use of these social media apps and their ability to an interest in embracing change, can really be leaders. And the senior generations love it. I mean, for me, the most exciting thing is when I see like 80-year-old grandmother rocking out on getting on Facebook and doing Snapchat and Instagram and so forth. And maybe you don't have your grandmother on your Snapchat account, but they get very excited and engaged as well. Because at the essence, everybody plays games. It's hardwired into our psyche.
Well, that was an unexpected bonus to our conversation. I love going from all the anxieties around cybersecurity to the idea of games and play and fun in family businesses. So on that note, Holly, I want to thank you very sincerely for sharing your time and your expertise.
Thank you so much.
And your experience. All the best.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want to learn more about Daughters in Charge, check out our website at daughtersincharge.com, where you can download our free toolkit. And if you'd like to share your story, just email me at amy@daughtersincharge.com. daughtersincharge.com.